Hi guys, it's me, Lan. I'm so sorry part two took so long to get to you. But it was very, very hot. So thank you so much for your patience and I hope you enjoy it. Bye!
Fit into the world around them. Like, Malcolm is weird and admittedly has apparently difficulties with relationships because he's always looking for the future ex, Mrs. Malcolm.
Loves getting married.
Right? Loves getting married.
It's one of his favorite hobbies.
And, you know, he's got a child, and he at one point romanced Julianne Moore, who I also love and was a pick for Poison Ivy for me for a long time.
Oh, my long-term pick, because it used to be ScarJo back in like 2004.
Like the ghost world ScarJo?
Yeah, like she was around there. She did that movie where she was like a computer chick or something and had like those bangs that went like this and then had pigtails for a very long time, because that was way before Margot Robbie. Actually, my Harley Quinn choice at that time was Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, no, I can see that.
But then she was like, I'm never doing another superhero franchise. I need to take a break from that. I'm like, that's fair. But Evan Rachel Wood. I think Evan Rachel Wood would be great with Margot Robbie.
Oh, she has that like gravitas. And she seems intelligent, like in a science way.
And she also like exudes the like sultry femininity, but she's also extremely androgynous.
In a might eat you like a poisonous plant kind of way.
And I think she would be a really good like green ivy.
Oh yeah.
I really want to see that on screen at some point. Well, I guess the complication with that is a lot of the green ivy has poisonous skin.
Yeah.
But I also think that would be really good. There's a Batman comic where Poison Ivy has a bunch of like young people who are like super into the like environmentalism or something, and they take over Central Park. I'm going to do spoilers. I think the police are trying to attack Poison Ivy and one of the kids jumps in the way but touches her and dies horribly right there. And she's just like mortified by what just happened. They're so young.
And she didn't want to kill that person.
No, they were protecting her and touched her. And then she basically is just like, oh, nope, this is done. Take me away. And even though I just basically told you how it ended, I think that would be a wonderful Batman movie. And I really want them to start taking like all those random things more often to make.
No, I get that.
Oh, sorry. I just found out.
Yes. No, go ahead.
The Harley Quinn cartoon that Hayley Cuoco does.
Oh, yes.
New season's coming out. I'm so excited.
If you're not watching it, it is excellent. I love King Shark so much.
My friend is a grumpy bro, and he's just like, that show is way better than it has any right to be. He hates Hot Topic Harley in general.
DC Comics crushes at their animated features. Mm-hmm. Their animated features, a lot of them are so much stronger than what live actions are allowed to be in the DC universe, because the live actions I feel like are very tightly controlled. I love Zack Snyder. People love Wes Anderson. Well, I love Zack Snyder's filmmaking, where it's like heavily music involved and very specifically done. The director's cut is always better, and I don't understand why they can't just let him make the goddamn movie that he wants to make instead. But anyways, I would love to see Zack Snyder work with Jeff Goldblum. I don't know. I don't think that Jeff Goldblum would do like the physical training Zack Snyder requires, but like if Zack Snyder ever made a comedy, I would love for it to have Jeff Goldblum in it. Just a weird comedy movie, perhaps about some kind of heist that continues to go extremely chaotic and wrong, but eventually works out in the end for like our protagonists, who are the quote-unquote bad guys.
I was just thinking what a ride it would be to see Goldblum and Owen Wilson together.
Right?
As well. I just want like all the chaotic, charming men who have whimsy to be in a role together, or in a movie together. Just one role. They all play the same character.
The same character at different points in that character's life, and all of the female love interests are Laura Dern.
I'm fine with that. Yeah.
We love Laura Dern. We love Laura Dern. Laura Dern and Jeff Goldblum is excellent. They have amazing chemistry. I did enjoy Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum, but finding out that they're married, I'm like, oh yeah, now that makes sense to me.
I feel like they met on the set of Transylvania 65,000 and then were either like in a relationship or married by the time Earth Girls Are Easy came out. That's a weird little movie. If anyone wants to watch a movie where they're like, what was that?
Yep.
Transylvania 65,000.
Oh yeah. Gina Davis was also in The Fly. I forgot that bit, because The Fly and Earth Girls Are Easy both have that same scene, which apparently The Fly came first, so Earth Girls Are Easy is a tribute to The Fly, not the other way around.
I think Scott came in like right before the pregnancy story in The Fly. And so they go through the whole like abortion nightmare and stuff. And I'm like, what is happening? But I don't know if Scott's really built for Cronenberg.
I don't think a lot of people are, respectfully. Sorry, I'm just reading through the just reading through the synopsis of this film, because I'm like, I don't remember any of this. And I'm like, that's probably why, because much like Event Horizon, which stars Jeff Goldblum's Jurassic Park co-star Sam Neill, I have probably blocked it out. I have probably blocked it out because fucking yikes.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot, a lot.
It seems like a lot for sure.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum's had almost a 50-year career now. It's like 48 or 49 years, and there's 1 or 2 years in that where he doesn't have a credit. That doesn't mean he wasn't working. It's just that nothing came out that year.
Mm-hmm. And he also has actually done a lot more voice work than than I had thought, just from The Prince of Egypt. He's done a lot of, it looks like, television voice work. That's pretty cool.
I think he's very much like the Christopher Walken thing, where it's like they didn't have kids.
Well, he has 2 children.
Now.
Yeah.
The oldest one is like maybe 10, but his wife is, I think she's almost 40. Just like with her age and having kids is what I was thinking of. I'm not being judgy. She seems like a beautiful, whimsical match for him. A little contortionist gymnast. Olympian gymnast.
You know, that old chestnut.
Oh, they danced together in an episode of The World According to Jeff Goldblum. And it's so sweet.
That seems like such a, like a Goldblum-y thing, as maybe ballroom dancing.
Yeah.
It feels like it's very on brand for Jeff Goldblum.
Though I will say, not trying to be judgy with this, and I don't know if I've said this before already, it'll probably come up again. A lot of the guys I had huge crushes on when I was a small child, I was like, but they're grown ass adults, so you're probably not gonna marry them. And now most of them are married to women who are within 5 years of my age. And I was like, I just had to wait till I was in my 30s. John Stamos. Leonardo DiCaprio seems to exclusively date women under the age of 25.
Yeah, you would have aged out of that bracket.
I haven't checked recently, but his most recent girlfriend, I think, was turning 25 last month. So I don't know if they're still together, but it'll be a first time for him if she got to actually pass her birthday.
What is it Taylor Swift says? You'll get older, but your levels will stay my age. No. No judgment.
No judgment.
Well, a little bit.
Little bit of judgment.
Little bit of judgment.
I mean, I definitely judge the guys that I've dated who were older, but I was also below 30 at that time, so.
Yeah. I mean, it can work. It's just.
Yeah, for sure. It's just, you know, a lot of things. One movie that Jeff Goldblum was in that I have not seen, probably for reasons, is The Big Chill. Trigger warning for anyone. The entire premise of the film is a group of friends meeting up after their friend's funeral who's killed themselves.
Okay. That has like Kevin Kline and stuff in it, right?
Yes. Great cast. Sheedy.
Ally Sheedy.
Yeah, she's in it.
Lots of former John Hughesians.
Yeah, the soundtrack is iconic.
Okay.
It's like when, if you own vinyl, you probably own that soundtrack. Lots of, I think it was literally put out by Motown. I might be wrong. It's a great, great soundtrack. My coworker at one point, when I used to work at a cafe, he was going through a bunch of records he got for free and was like, oh, The Big Chill, this classic. Oh, I've already got a copy. I mean, who doesn't? And I was like, I don't. And so he gave it to me. But I haven't seen it because it seems like a lot. I've had enough experience in my life with that.
That's fair. That's fair. I always got it confused with another film that is completely unrelated and not all the same, called The Big Hit.
Mm. Mm.
It's a Mark Wahlberg action film. And I was like, these are the same movie, right? Like,
I love that movie more than I should.
It's just one movie that's called different things in different places.
Is China Chow in that movie?
I'm not sure. Christina Applegate and Lou Diamond Phillips are, though.
Lou Diamond Phillips!
Oh. If you haven't, I mean, Prodigal Son is pretty violent, but I love Lou Diamond Phillips, so. It's now on Netflix. There are 2 seasons about a profiler whose dad is a serial killer, and Lou Diamond Phillips basically plays his like surrogate dad. So you see Lou Diamond Phillips in a lot of like really great soft turtlenecks in a very Jeff Goldblum-y way, with leather jackets.
I feel like that could have gone either way. He's either like this really gentle father figure, or he's like the villain of the show, you know?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So
It's been a chaotic journey through the wonders of Goldbloom and life stuff and all kinds of things, and we hope that you've stuck around and have enjoyed the content, even in the multiple trigger warnings for this episode. Mm-hmm. We do appreciate you and your listenership, and
I also appreciate Jeff Goldblum.
We do appreciate Jeff Goldblum. Thanks for being out there and being a face of being extreme authenticity, or evidencing extreme authenticity. What am I trying to say? Embodying extreme, yes, authenticity, and encouraging us to be all of our weird and wacky selves to still be successful while doing it. Mm-hmm. I have to ask you one question. Who is your favorite Jeff Goldblum co-star?
I'm just picturing him and Taika Waititi, but that's in interviews. Oh my goodness. Allie!
I'm sorry. It's the impossible question. You can pick three. Pick three.
Now I'm panicking even more.
Well, I would have to say that the combination of Sam Neill and Laura Dern, because they count as one.
Well, yes.
Obviously. Tom Hiddleston in Thor Ragnarok.
Speaking of Taylor Swift. When you say that, it makes me think of some of the awards that he's won. It's in like Wes Anderson movies, and it's for best ensemble. Mm-hmm. I think it's so hard to pick because, like, especially these days, and by these days, I mean the 90s and onward, but even before that too, like a lot of his career, he has been in a lot of really great groups. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that he's chosen so often to be in ensemble films. That whole, like, he likes playing off of people and feeding off of people, and that's like sort of culminated in him having a huge amount of group projects. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm cheating by not answering that question and saying his career is full of great chemistry. But I mean, him touching Laura Dern's hand
is iconic.
Is one of the most beautiful moments on film ever. So I don't know how anyone could beat the Jurassic Park trio.
Neither do I.
Even in other Jurassic Park movies.
I did also like the combination of him and Will Smith in Independence Day.
One of the only people in Hollywood who could make eye contact with Will Smith in a movie. That's all they are.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. In the 90s, like, Will Smith's blockbuster movies had, like, dynamite co-stars, mm-hmm. which also connects back to Jeff Goldblum, because Kevin Kline was in The Big Chill with Jeff Goldblum and in Wild Wild West with Will Smith.
Was it Bruckheimer who made that?
I have no idea.
But somebody really, really, really wanted giant mechanical spiders in a movie. I have heard more than one person. I think Kevin Smith did those, like, An Evening with Kevin Smith movies. And in one of them, he talks about how they wanted to put a giant spider in a movie. And then eventually Wild Wild West came out. But I also went to Neil Gaiman's book tour for American Gods back in the day.
Yeah.
And he told a story about their attempts to make a Sandman movie, exact same thing. And I heard this way before The Evening With. And I was like, how many movies did he pitch this to before the person who made Wild Wild West was like, fine, you can have giant robot spiders. Oh, ridiculous. Kevin Kline is a gem. He's lovely.
Yeah, that film is a very much a quintessential 90s movie that would not get made today because of, oh boy, so many reasons. Racism, ableism, sexism, all of the isms. So many isms.
All of the
isms. All many isms held together with a super awesome headlining song by Will Smith.
Fuck. What was I just about to say?
Was it that Jeff Goldblum has aged like a fine wine?
No. But he has. No, it was totally deviant. It was, if you ever want to watch two people who are deeply in love with each other, watch Kevin Kline and his wife, Phoebe Cates.
Classic 80s It Girl.
On Sesame Street, sing a song about measuring things with a ruler.
Aww.
But she's sitting with him and they're just, you can tell they love each other so much.
That's phenomenal. We love that. We love love stories.
But yeah, Jeff Goldblum, I hope he just keeps making things for the rest of his life where he is fabulous and beautiful. If you love Jeff Goldblum on Instagram, he's delightful. And I think we're really getting a picture of what kind of guy I like, which is like a very tall weirdo. Because I'm like, Vince Vaughn, Jeff Goldblum. Oh, I'd watch a movie with those two in it. But they, neither of them would probably be the lead.
No, the lead would be Owen Wilson.
Or Devon Sawa.
Who can say? He is doing a lot of fun things lately.
He is also tall for Hollywood. He's 6 feet tall.
Huh.
Yeah.
People who can look Jeff Goldblum in the eye include Chris Hemsworth, but he was seated, so a lot of their interaction was different.
Yeah, you can see in Hacks, there's a moment where he's with Jean Smart in the back of a car and he's like leaning in to her and everything. And you can see that Hollywood was not made for 6 foot tall guys because he's like to be in the shot properly. Oh, it's so good, guys. Go watch it.
So I'm going to play the pitch game yet again. Can we have a movie with Jeff Goldblum and Jean Smart where they are the divorced parents of grown children or someone's cool aunt and uncle who have just... No, Jean Smart and Jeff Goldblum is someone's divorced cool aunt and uncle, but for some reason they'd be in the same place with their like grown-up niece or nephew's family for some reason to help them.
A wedding
to help them for some kind of reason. And maybe it's like two funny people falling in love again. I'm sure this movie has already been made, but Jean Smart is a comedic genius and Jeff Goldblum is a delight. So
I would be really interested to see how that chemistry works out. Just try to picture them together. She's tired of his bullshit.
Yeah, she's just like very over the whimsy. She's a very serious person, maybe, but very dryly funny.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm just picturing them on like a destination wedding for like their niece, and whichever one's not blood related is like still in touch with that side of the family. So the niece invited them and they haven't seen each other for like well over a decade.
And he does something weird as a job, like making shoes, like bespoke cobbling. Not that bespoke cobbling is a weird job, but it's just not a job that is regularly seen in the world as we know it today.
I would like Jean Smart to be in everything. But also that makes me think in Hacks, they have a lot of old footage of her character. They seem to have done some like youthifying thing. So I don't know if it's they just got someone who looks a lot like her and they just put something over it or what. I haven't looked into it, but it would be really interesting to see any flashbacks with like a young Jean Smart and Jeff Goldblum.
We'll just get Billy Lord. It's fine.
I think that Devon Sawa and Jeff Goldblum should be in a movie together.
They should. And it should be a comedy. More comedies for Devon Sawa if he wants to do them.
Yeah. Maybe like an action comedy.
Like Stuber, which actually is a hilarious film. Okay, so Stuber is this movie with, it's Dave Bautista as a police officer who's like a very serious, like rugged 1980s movie action cop. And he gets laser eye surgery and he can't see, but he also can't disengage from work. So he hires an Uber, which is driven by Stu, aka Kumail Nanjiani, to take him to like crime scenes and stuff. And it's like a buddy cop comedy with a person who really doesn't want to be part of the buddy cop comedy.
Just an Uber driver, like, guy.
Like, it sounds like a sort of movie. And I watched it, like, while I was getting tattooed. My tattoo artist put it on, and he was like, you will find this hilarious. Shout out to Chris for the amazing Jurassic Park tattoo that he did on my thigh. Yes, I have a huge Jurassic Park tattoo because I love it so much.
I have a moderately sized Jaws tattoo.
Aww. It's so cute though.
That's some bad hat, Harry.
That's, oh, I get that now.
Shout out to Kurt Von Getz on Instagram.
But yeah, it was like way funnier and cuter and more endearing than it really like had any right to be.
Who directed it?
Michael Dells.
Oh.
Who is a Canadian director who also directed FUBAR and FUBAR 2. As well as It's All Gone, Pete Tong, and Goon.
Oh, I like Goon. It makes me sad, so I don't watch it a lot. But it's good.
It's another one of those movies where you're like, this premise is dumb. But you're like, oh, my whole heart is now invested in this film. And Sean William Scott, who's been every douchebag villain ever, is actually like a really heartwarming leading man. Thank you.
Yeah, lots of emotion.
But I think there's also like a metaphoric connection to like, he was just that guy. And he tried to be like an action movie star with, there was like a Jet Li movie that he was in with Jamie King.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly they were like, you're going to be the funny douchebag. And then he can also play like the lovely soft dude.
If you let him stop being Stifler, he can actually act.
Uh-huh.
His comedic timing is excellent. He's done serious dramas. Perhaps at some point we will also do a little side, little mini episode on Sean William Scott.
I love Role Models, so yes. I love that movie, and he's so good in it. He plays Stifler, essentially, but he's so good in it. Him, Paul Rudd.
And McLovin.
Paul Rudd and everyone. You want to talk about somebody who's like, oh, him and blank. Just great.
Oh, yes. Paul Rudd is the Little Black Dress of Hollywood. He's excellent. Put it on a shirt. Put it on a shirt and send it to Paul Rudd. He might actually wear it. Paul Rudd and Jeff Goldblum should be in a movie together also.
Yes.
Jeff Goldblum should play Paul Rudd's father, and his mom should be Jean Smart. And it's his second destination wedding that they're going to. Done. Done.
Or is it his kid's wedding that they're going
to? Oh, yes.
And he's also going through a lot with his wife and, you know, the person his kid's marrying or something. Or maybe we could go fresh and say that they have a really great relationship with their kid's significant other, because in actuality, that happens a lot.
That's fair. That's fair. The in-law trope is dead. The mean, terrible in-law trope should die a thousand deaths.
I think it's because, like, a lot of, I don't know, me personally, I'm sorry. I don't have time for that. I'm tired. Mm-mm. Like, in my life, no. Every family has drama, but I'm not spending the rest of my life navigating an extremely toxic, like, greatest generation boomer kids kind of relationship. Literally thinking about Red's mom and Kitty. That's
fair. Okay, here we go. Jean Smart and Jeff Goldblum are their parents. Paul Rudd is the son. Billy Lord is the granddaughter.
Yes!
And we get it all in one movie. And they're all kind of like a weird, eccentric family.
How old is Camille Nanjiani?
Let's find out. Plot on me. One moment, please. Camille Nanjiani he's 44.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe not as the fiance, but at the same time, I don't know.
He can be the MC. He's the cool, fun uncle that is the dad's friend from college, and he is the MC, and he's gonna tell all of the embarrassing stories, and then we'll get like flashbacks of college days where it's like wet hot American summer and everyone is just the same ages, just a different clothes.
Which is funny, because I was gonna suggest Michael Showalter as the director, and he's one of the people who made that, but Michael Showalter has made a couple Camille Nanjiani movies that are just top notch.
I feel like we should just have a separate podcast for pitching movies that don't exist. But should.
Yeah.
Anyways, Jeff Goldblum and all the things. Every day is Jeff Goldblum Day, and I hope that Jeff Goldblum has the Jeff Goldblumiest day that he possibly can.
Can I ask you a question before we go?
Sure. Absolutely.
What do you think the golden age of Goldblum is?
I think the golden age of Goldblum is, like, as a general thing, is weirdos being celebrated in media. Not just Jeff Goldblum, but, like, for example, the show Stranger Things recently had a really popular character join the most recent season.
I haven't watched it!
It's an actor called, his name is Joseph Quinn. He looks quite a lot like Heath Ledger, in my opinion.
Oh.
And he plays a character by the name of Eddie Munson, who's, like, the D&D DM of the kids club.
Oh.
And he's like 80s rocker metal sort of dude who's considered like a freak of the time.
I think I've seen some stuff on the Twitter.
And people love him.
Yeah.
People love him. They love him so much. And they love that character. And the fact that a character like that has space to exist, and that beloved characters are allowed to be funny and weird and different, I think stems from a lot of the work that, like, Jeff Goldblum and other actors and actresses did to normalize different kinds of leading people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you look at Independence Day, right, you have the classic leading man in Will Smith, and then you have the weird, awkward scientist and his dad in Jeff Goldblum. And the fact that, yeah, Jeff Goldblum is also a fox didn't hurt, but the fact that this movie hinges upon the classic action hero working together with the smart guy who develops into an action hero in his own way.
A super weird smart guy, socially awkward. Right,
it was really, like, fresh at that time.
Yeah.
And then it created a space where other kinds of characters could be the hero, and they could exist, and they could fill multifaceted, complex roles within a piece of media. So these characters can now exist and be multifaceted, and I think that the golden age of Goldblum is not just his own, you know, being celebrated and given like Emmy nominations for just being himself on a TV show where he like learns about stuff, right? Or teaches other people about stuff. It's that there is space for characters that are different and weird, and the world is a much bigger place than just Jock A and Pretty Girl B save the world and fall in love, or, you know, stuff like that, like stuff that Hollywood used to be. And I think that performers like Jeff Goldblum made it possible for the world of media to become more open for different kinds of characters.
Weirdos.
Yeah, weirdos. Or people, you know, or people
offbeat.
Like with characters that may be coded as autistic or having ADHD or having, like we said, we were talking about before, like having anxiety, like nerves that are not just nerves, or different kinds of people where everyone can recognize parts of themselves that they might not be able to and might feel excluded from in normal, aka normal with heavy air quotes, you know, boy meets girl, girl falls in love with boy, etc. and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think it is?
Well, I was wanting to originally like break down his career into like phases or decades.
Sorry, I went existential on that one.
No, I love it. I love it. That means we both have different answers. Mine's a lot simpler, which is his entire life.
That's fair.
You can't pick it because he's always just completely him. Like you said, he's just doing what he wants. And like, he's a human. I'm sure he has complex emotions and everything. He was a dweeby looking little kid with all his glory. I love his childhood. I love childhood pictures. If y'all want to like tag us in your 1995 pictures or something when you first saw Devon Sawa, I would love it.
Show us all your 90s haircuts.
Oh my goodness. But yeah, he just, it's not even just that he keeps getting better. It's just that he's consistently been wonderful his whole career, from like the guy using the phone in the background of a scene in a movie in the 70s to him in all his glory in Thor Ragnarok.
Jurassic World or Dominion. I don't know. I watched the first one and then I didn't watch any of the other ones because I was like, I just don't like Chris Pratt. I don't know why. It makes it really hard. When I watched Guardians of the Galaxy, speaking to another Goldblum connection, because the Grandmaster was in an end credit scene of Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yes.
I just imagine it's Charlie Day instead.
I really like Guardians of the Galaxy 2. There's a really good video essay on YouTube by Lindsay Ellis. Did a video essay on Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and like she looks at it through interpersonal relationships, how those are shaped by your family, what is family, found family, having to do the emotional labor in order to get to like certain places in life and all that. And it's just really beautiful. But one of my favorite albums is the Guardians of the Galaxy 2, because I have it on cassette tape.
Phenomenal. Come and get your love.
That's the first one though.
I know. But it's,
yeah, it's also a good good soundtrack. My only issue is, as someone who loves The Runaways, if I were making a mixed tape for someone to show them like the best music that's going on right now, Cherry Bomb is a bop, but I don't think any like hardcore Runaways fan would put that on as the one example of The Runaways. That's going to be for very few people. Most people don't care about The Runaways. They didn't then and they don't now, but everybody loves Joan Jett, so
it's fair.
It's where she started.
We could also talk about The Runaways movie, because I have thoughts about Kristen Stewart's transformation and Riley Keough and Dakota Fanning being Sherry Curry. How much I was like, oh, okay. I get the Kristen Stewart thing now.
Right? No, that was definitely that too. I was like, oh my gosh.
All right.
Oh, I get it. And like the scene at the end where she's writing Crimson and Clover in the bathtub. But yeah, the movie that cemented that for me was the, I don't know how you feel about it, but the most recent Charlie's Angels movie. And I was like, oh, I do have a very big crush on Kristen Stewart. Maybe I should bleach my hair again. And then I was blonde within a week. Within probably 48 hours, actually.
That's fair. That's fair. Oh,
Next episode, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled fair. We are returning to the main Devon Promenade,
I guess. Devon Promenade! Welcome to the Devon Promenade!
If these have been Devon segues, we will return to the main Devon thoroughfare, promenade, whatever you'd like to call it. The meat and potatoes of this podcast, or protein and potatoes of this podcast for those of you who don't consume animal products.
I'll take that protein shake. I'm so sorry, Devon Sawa.
So sorry. Do you want to tell the people what we will be venturing into next time?
Next episode, we're doing it. It won't be the first, or it won't be the last time, but we are talking about Now and Then, y'all. We're back to the Devon Sawa Christina Ricci
convergence.
I'm going to lose it. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to be so happy. I watch this movie a lot. I actually have a VHS copy with it. Like, it's repaired with scotch tape because my machine ate it and I ripped the VCR apart because that was a life skill my dad taught me as a child.
It's things you had to know in the 90s.
Yeah, but I'm very excited. And you guys will get to hear what an impact Scott Wermer had on me.
I won't lie, I own a cruiser bike because I have always coveted the bicycle. I haven't rode it this year and I probably should get it tuned up. Yikes. But I always envied the bicycles that the girls in Now and Then rode around. Those like sweet 70s bikes with the banana seat and the flags.
Mm-hmm. At one point, somebody bought me a red bike when I was a kid. It was like my bicycle. It got stolen. But before that, it was red because I was Roberta. Aww. Me and my friends would ride around.
So we will be
not talking to the other town, but
right, we will be talking about that. Expect a love of bell bottoms and bicycles and Tony Orlando and Dawn, speaking of banging soundtracks.
Brendan Fraser,
exactly.
Horace Leachman, sorry.
So brace yourselves, come back, rewatch Now and Then.
If you haven't watched it,
watch it.
Why are you here? How did you find us? Why do you want to be here? No, watch it.
Take a watch of Now and Then. Enjoy the coming of age feelings that are timeless, despite the fact that it is set in the like 1970s before either of us were alive. And just enjoy. We'll talk about first crushes and bicycles and
witchy things.
Probably.
Fun stuff that preteen girls get up to and how old men can eat it when it comes to movies about girls growing up because they do not understand.
It's true.
Sorry, I'm looking. Yeah. I'm thinking about one specific film review.
Was it Ebert?
It was.
Yeah.
He loved Marie Antoinette, which I found really surprising because he focused on like, this is about the loneliness of this woman and all that. And I was like, sir, based on your review of Now and Then, I didn't think you would like that. But
what ghostwriter did you get to do this for you?
Yeah. But we will talk about that then.
Little girls, ghost stories.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about socks, not the kind that go on your feet, but the kind that are used in movies. If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. And what makes the best fake boobs?
Yep. So we will talk about that.
Thank you so much for joining us. And as always, we are very, very sorry, Devon Sawa.
We're so sorry, Devon Sawa.
Oh my God, so sorry. Meeting adjourned.
Can I Keep You is brought to you by the Devon Sawa Appreciation Society. Follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Can I Keep You Pod. Listen, follow, and leave us a review on the Podbean app or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we're sorry, Devon Sawa.